President Obama continues to render decisions in the final hours of his presidency. Our region was on his to-do list and got some attention last week. The president used his power under the Antiquities Act to make the existing Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument bigger, with new areas included in Jackson County and Klamath County in Oregon and in Siskiyou County in California. Supporters are excited by the expansion. They pushed for it. But the expansion is not as big as what they requested. So let's talk acreage and approaches with some of the monument expansion supporters. Pam Marsh is now an Oregon state representative, newly inaugurated, former Ashland City Council member, owner of the Green Springs Inn, and therefore former resident of the monument area. Hi, Pam. Good to see
you again. Good
morning. Dave Willis is with us once again. He's with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. Hello, Dave.
Jeffrey.
And Pepper Trail is with us as well. He's a wildlife biologist and poet. Pepper, welcome back.
Thanks, Dave.
He's Dave. I'm Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
So, Pepper, let's start with you. Give us an idea of what makes the place so special that it needs protection in your mind, and how much bigger did it get?
Well, the monument was established, of course, in 2000 by President Clinton, and it was the first national monument that was established in recognition of its extraordinary biodiversity, the variety of species and ecosystems that it includes. And it's particularly important as a connection between the Cascade Mountains and the Siskiyou Mountains, as the name tells us. But when it was established, the monument was constrained by some non-biological boundaries, which, of course, was a bit of a problem for a monument established for biological protection. The most obvious of those non-biological boundaries was the California-Oregon state border, but there were other areas of concern, particularly in inadequate protection of watersheds. So I was involved with a group of scientists who, ever since 2010, have been discussing areas that could be included in the monument, areas of public land that were adjacent to the monument that would significantly increase the protection of the area and especially its resilience in the face of climate change, which was really not considered when the monument was established.
Dave Willis, you had the numbers when we first got into the room here, because I was asking about how much bigger it got, and you seem to have these pretty well pressed into your memory.
Well, the original monument was just under 53,000 acres, but by purchases from willing sellers of inholdings inside the original monument boundaries, it increased to a little over 66,000 acres. And the president's recent proclamation added 47,625 acres. So that brings the current total up to about 114,000 acres of federal public land. The outer boundary is larger than that, but only the federal public land within the outer boundary is the actual monument. Any private land inside the outer boundary, and I live on private land that was private land from before the time it was a monument, in the original monument, any private land remains private. It's still only influenced by county and state land use regulations. The only thing that changes for private land inside the outer boundaries is that the public land next to them is now supposed to be managed for protection by BLM.
Managed like wilderness or for some other value? Talk about the differences, if you would, between wilderness and monument.
Great question. A wilderness is a wilderness is a wilderness. But the devil or the angel of what a national monument is in the details of the monument-specific proclamation. And each proclamation is different. And the management plan that interprets what that proclamation means. So in this particular monument, there are hundreds and hundreds of miles of roads that people can ride on. The BLM is supposed to be able to cut timber if it's part of a science-based ecological restoration authorized project to protect old-growth forest characteristics. The grazing can continue until BLM does a study, if BLM does a study, but though they're supposed to do one, to determine whether or not grazing is incompatible with protecting the native species and natural features the monument was established to protect. Now, BLM did a study and they determined incompatibility, and some ranchers chose to be paid to donate their leases for permanent retirement, but the ranchers who didn't choose to be paid and take the buyout, even though BLM found the grazing was incompatible back in 2008, they're still grazing. BLM has yet to enforce their incompatibility determination.
Can BLM just terminate the leases without a buyout? Or let the leases lapse?
The proclamation
anyway?
Gives BLM the authority if incompatibility has been determined. Thus far, BLM has not found it in themselves to enforce that authority.
All right, so incompatibility with grazing, but the grazing continues.
That's correct.
Pam Marsh, I want to turn to you. Mm-hmm. Numbers were somewhat important, it seems like, because the request was for a near doubling in acreage within the monument, and we obviously didn't get to that number. What were the dynamics there, and what got left out?
Well, these other folks are probably better versed than I am to talk about what is not specifically within the boundary. What I can say is we think it's better. It's not perfect. It's not as big as we would have liked, but we are extraordinarily grateful for the expansion that has taken place. You know, Pepper and Dave can talk about how the monument is good for critters and ecosystems, but I think there's a very strong case to be made as well that the monument is good for people and communities. You know, the monument, especially in its expansion toward Ashland, toward the western side, really provides the backdrop for our community. It is a source of recreation. It is a tremendous opportunity for education about ecosystems and critters and the magnificence of this forest. It's also potentially a base for our economic development. We are a tourist-based community, so to have yet another attraction on our resume of tourist attractions to pull people into the community and to suggest that they stay a night longer is a great thing. So, yes, the monument is not as big as it could be, but it's a tremendous step forward in the expansion toward Ashland and going over that California border that Pepper referenced earlier.
We are talking about the expansion of the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument with three supporters. Pam Marsh, you heard, is now an Oregon State Representative. She is also the owner of the Green Springs Inn and a former resident of that area. Pepper Trail is a wildlife biologist and poet. Dave Willis is with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Pepper, give us an example of something that lives in the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument that doesn't live anywhere else that makes this place so special.
Well, there are a few plants that are found in the monument area that are almost entirely restricted to the monument. There's a beautiful Mariposa lily, which is found in the monument area called Green's Mariposa lily. This is a lot of us are familiar with that flower in the spring as the pussy's ears, and this is a variety of that species. But there are many other species, although they're not restricted simply to the monument area, that are very dependent on it for connecting populations to the east and to the west, and to use the area to move between desirable habitats. For example, it's very important deer winter range. Studies by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife have shown that the deer population that comes here in the wintertime comes from as far away as Chiloquin to spend the winter in the relatively snow-free south-facing slopes.
Which is in northern Klamath County for folks who are keeping track. Yeah, that's a long trek.
The Pacific fisher, which is a big member of the weasel family, has quite a healthy population in the Ashland watershed to the west of the monument, but we've got now genetic proof that those fishers at least occasionally cross I-5 and turn up in the monument area. So it's a corridor for the movement of those important carnivores. There's birders are particularly fond of great gray owls, which is the sort of the flagship species of this area for many birders. There's the Mountain Birding Festival every spring, which is focused on that species. And the areas that great gray owls like to use are within the expansion area, although unfortunately some of those areas that were left out are some of the most important areas for great gray owls. So it's really not a story just of species, but of the whole range of biodiversity and the connections that the monument represents.
Yeah, it's not necessary. I mean, there are some unique species, but the unique thing about this place is the the mosaic of habitats that makes for such a multiplicity of so many different types of species in one relatively small area. That's the biodiversity aspect.
Let's talk about the areas that were expanded into, because Dave Willis, again, you're with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Council, and the expansion takes the monument into California near Soda Mountain. So what is gained through that pooching out toward the Klamath River?
Well, the original monument, the only national monument established specifically to protect biodiversity, had a fairly arbitrary state line as its southern boundary. It cut various watersheds in half. And so Slide Creek and Scotch Creek, Camp Creek that start up in the monument are able to flow down into California. Jenny Creek was cut in half. Not in half, but truncated at the state line, is able to continue on. As well as there's some special habitats in there, the oak savanna, oak grassland, more of a Mediterranean chaparral type as well, that are both added and continued in the California portion of the monument. And it's very important, critical deer winter range there, the Horseshoe Ranch Wildlife Area. California Department of Fish and Wildlife has radio-collared deer that winter down on the California side in what's now the monument expansion, and summer as far away as Chiloquin, southeast Crater
Lake.
Okay,
same herd we were talking about.
They weren't very cognizant of that state line.
Okay, we have a question here on the phone from Sarah in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking Cascade Siskiyou Monument Expansion with Dave Willis, Pam Marsh, and Pepper Trail.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious because there are some signs I see in Ashland that say no Siskiyou Monument. And part of the sign, and I don't know much about the debate here, but one of them says protect access to public land. And so I'm curious, how are we affected in terms of access to those portions?
Big one and an excellent question. Thank you for that, Sarah. So who gets into what parts of the monument based on the designation existing and what is now about to happen or did it just happen?
Everyone has access to all parts of the monument. Usually when people say access, though, they're talking about vehicular access. And the original BLM planning documents were clear that the monument is riddled with roads that were built for the purpose of commercial logging. And these roads, this exceptional road density is harmful for both hydrological and wildlife values. And so the original monument, there was a transportation management plan in the works. It said there were 412 miles of road in the monument, and it was going to cut between 164 miles or something like that. A number of those roads were already non-functional. They are overgrown or blocked by slides or whatever. But there will still be plenty of access by vehicles to the monument over hundreds of miles of road. But because the purpose of the monument is to be managed, to protect the native species and natural features, if the BLM is doing their job right, there will be some road closures, but plenty of vehicular access will remain.
Have gates been put up? Have there been any roads ripped and seeded since the original monument designation?
Well, there's been some confusion about whether that's happened because of the monument or because of the wilderness that was designated in the backcountry of the monument of 209. There have been a fair number of roads closed in the wilderness part of the monument.
That's the Soda Mountain Wilderness?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there have been some roads closed in the monument itself outside the wilderness, but very few. There's also confusion because certain private landowners have gated off their private land and prevented access to public land beyond them.
Okay, so it's not just a federal thing. Boyd and Wolf Creek wants to know if there's going to be a new management plan for the monument, and if so, when?
Well, let me just follow up just briefly on the road issue. There's a huge conservation biology literature of scientific studies that show the negative impacts of roads, even fairly small appearing roads, on a wide variety of wildlife. Disturbance of breeding activities, splitting up of habitats, as well as the hydrological problems, the problems with water flow that Dave alluded to. So in this monument that is established for biological diversity and for the protection of these unique values, The scientific community certainly feels that the road density is excessive, and we're continually hoping that that density will be decreased. There still, as Dave said, will be plenty of access for people to get into trailheads and cross the monument, but we really need to prioritize the biological values, and that will involve closing some of these very poorly maintained and ecologically harmful roads.
Again, the purpose of the monument is to protect its native species and natural features.
Okay. Down to our last 2 minutes. Is there going to be a new management plan?
There will be a new management plan. When is a very good question, Boyd. The original monument was established in 2000, and BLM did not sign off on the final management plan for the original monument until 2008.
All right, we've already referenced some of the straight lines here. The land ownership up there tends to follow some of the old BLM checkerboard from railroad land grant days. I notice in particular the boundary before and after expansion, it seems to be geared to miss Hyatt and Howard Prairie Lakes. Can anyone explain what that's about?
Actually, Hyatt Reservoir is within the expansion.
Is it? Okay.
Howard Prairie is not within the expansion. That was land that was already more or less being managed for recreation, a lot of it leased by Jackson County, and it was drawn out.
Pam Marsh, I'll ask this of you because you're in politics. There was a pretty good headwind here, including congressional opposition for Representative Walden in Oregon and LaMalfa on the California side. Did the opposition, do you think, play any factor in the expansion being somewhat smaller than was requested?
I suspect so. I mean, I don't think we know the full story of that because it happened in back rooms that we don't have access to. But I'm sure that some of the redrawing of potential boundaries was in acknowledgement of some of the opposition. And we are so grateful to those who supported us, Senators Wyden and Merkley, Governor Brown, local talent, and Ashland City Council's our former state representatives, Buckley and Bates. Tremendous local support, and we're grateful to all of them.
In about 10 seconds, this is the president's power to designate. Can a subsequent president undesignate?
Probably not.
Okay, so the monument expansion is going to stand as it is. Adds about 47,000 acres to what was 66,300 before that. Dave Willis from Soda Mountain Wilderness Council, Pam Marsh from the Oregon State Legislature, Pepper Trail biologist, thank you all for joining us today on the
thank
Jefferson
you.
Exchange.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank
That'll
you.
Do it for this hour. Please stay tuned.